Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 448. In this episode, Scott talks with podcaster, radio host, and advocate Ilan James White about the new digital journalism.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I've got on Skype here Ilan James White. How are you, sir?
I'm alive and kicking, sir.
Yes, you are alive and kicking, and you are becoming a media powerhouse. I knew you from your podcast, This Week in Blackness, which is now TWIB. Kind of a multimedia powerhouse. You've got radio, you've got magazines, you're on TV. I'm seeing you all over.
Indeed. TWIB has, it's been a very interesting ride altogether, because in all honesty, the podcast wasn't even the first thing what we did. What we did initially was, a web series on YouTube, that got picked up weirdly in the 2008, election cycle. It got picked up by academia and, the whole progressive, blogosphere. And then at that point we went from that and people started picking it up. I started being asked to speak across the country at universities and stuff like that. And then, and funny enough, to get out of having to actively video edit constantly, which is what I was doing, I started a podcast, which I had played with podcasting a few times, but I finally really committed to the podcast situation, in 2011, because it actually was requested from the audience. We did a podcast for 2 weeks in, I think, 2009, and people were talking about it for over a year, saying, oh, you got to bring that show back. And I'm like, okay. And then we did that, and so we started a podcast, and then all of a sudden from the podcast, we realized that people wanted to hear more from us because we were talking about one thing, but then we'd go on these tangents, especially because I'm a big nerd, so all of a sudden we'd be talking about some racial issue, and I'd try to make some Doctor Who comparison, and then people would be like
half the people get it, another half don't get it.
Right. And so, funny enough, enough of the audience actually was like, I really like it when you do that. And then some people were like, I have no clue what's happening. So I was like, why don't we do a nerd show? So then we ended up doing multiple podcasts. And by the beginning of 2013, we had a suite of shows that we were putting out, and people kept requesting more from what we were doing. And so we just kept stepping up, to whatever was requested of us.
Mm-hmm. And you've got, I can see 7 different shows, everything from sports to TWIB After Dark. We Nerd Hard is a fantastic show. You're doing all sorts of things, and you're also doing really, I think you said earlier, when we spoke, whatever's necessary. That is the description of TWIB, isn't it? Whatever's necessary.
Right. Right when I came back from Ferguson, doing coverage, I was having a bit of a crisis of faith. And so I was speaking with someone. There's actually a young woman who's doing a professor over at Old Dominion, and her postdoc, project was us, basically. It was TWIB, like, as an independent media space, wow, how it works and all that type of stuff. And so there's this woman who's just like an expert on everything we've ever said or done. Like, she has a database and all of it written down. She can tell us when certain references that we use regularly now, the first time we ever said it. Like, wow, she can do that. It's really weird. And so I was talking to her, and I was saying I was having this bit of a crisis of faith because TWIB has like evolved and changed over time. And I'm like, and then Ferguson happened, and then we were being referred to as hard hitting journalists and reporters. And I was like, that was never what I even said we were. And I'm not sure how to describe us or what we do, especially as new people are coming on. And she actually said, oh, well, I can describe it. TWIB is whatever's necessary. I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, anytime the community has ever needed something, or requested something, TWIB finds a way to do that. So if all of a sudden there needed to be more conversations around, sex positivity, all of a sudden TWIB After Dark was born so that, you could approach that. There's, around, the Zimmerman trial, there was a lot of, everyone was going through a lot. And so we were on a hiatus because we were about to build a studio in the Bay, And so we were in the bay in the middle of negotiations over getting the studio. And then the Zimmerman trial, verdict comes down and we end up going on air for 6 hours at a time, like six hour clips, just because we didn't know what else to do. And then with Ferguson, someone asked us to go, were we considering going down? We said we would go down if we could raise the money. The money was raised within 12 hours flat, and we went down there to cover it. And then we ended up becoming the counter narrative of this major, like watershed moment within U.S. history, especially around race. And we were like one of the few spaces that were actually actively providing a counter narrative to what the mainstream media was saying.
So this is really interesting. I want to dig into that. So first, for people who are maybe international people, I know that we have a lot of listeners who aren't from the U.S., who maybe aren't familiar. There was a shooting of a young black man named Michael Brown, August 9th in 2014 in Ferguson, Missouri. And this is a suburb of St. Louis. And depending on who you talk to, there's disputed circumstances about this, and this has caused protests and general unrest in Ferguson, and people are going down there. They're going down there to put their voice and make sure their voice is heard. And the protests have continued now almost 2 months after.
I think the young man was shot August 9th?
August 9th, in fact.
Yes, yeah, and it's still going. I mean, it's not as sexy now as it was in those first couple of weeks, where everyone and their mama was coming down there, a lot of press was coming down there to basically make their name within media, which was a problematic thing to do, and a lot were criticized for doing that. But yeah, this is something that's not stopping, and actually we're preparing to go back down there. There's a weekend of resistance that's being planned for the weekend of from October 10th to the 13th, and we're going back down there to cover that, because even in the past few days there was a police officer shooting, and then they responded to it, even though the police officer shooting had nothing to do with the protests. Mm-hmm. It seems it was a robbery that went wrong, and that's what happened with that. But of course, it's all now being rolled into one thing about Ferguson and the problem, and they're trying to solve it, I guess.
Well, and people are saying in this space, of social justice, and the people focused on racial issues in America, that this is the biggest thing since Selma. This is the voice being heard since March of 65, when 3,200 marchers departed from Selma to go to Montgomery, Alabama, and they walked and they slept in fields, and they really made sure that their voices were heard. And this is going to be the Selma, Alabama of our generation. Would you agree with that?
I don't know, is what I'm going
to
say.
Maybe too early to tell.
Yes, I believe that it's a very historic time. On one of our shows, Historical Blackness with Dr. Blair Kelly. She's a historian, award-winning author, and now she's dean over at NC State. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about this moment within history, and when she reframed it, it clicked, because you go back to these shootings that's occurred, and then the trial. So you have the Trayvon Martin shooting and the Zimmerman trial. You have the Jordan Davis, Michael Dunn, and you're watching all of these things connect. And then we have Michael Brown, Ferguson, Officer Wilson, and all of these things are creating a bigger moment overall. And so you can see how each one of them adds to it. And actually, I've even heard someone suggested that they believe that you could start this period of time off with Katrina. And you go back that far and watch how all of this is happening. A lot of this has to do with social media, the idea that information, because a lot, what's happening, the shootings and the police actions, it's not new. What's happening is that the information is being moved faster, and more people are now know what's happening because of that. So Ferguson might not have been on the evening news in the Bay Area, mm-hmm. but on social media, I was connected to it from jump. All of a sudden, you just see Ferguson, the shooting, blah, blah, blah. People are on the streets. You start to see pictures. You're seeing videos of it. So then you're automatically connected to something in a way that even 10 years ago, 5 years ago, really, you might not have been as connected to, but now you are.
Exactly. And I think what's interesting, and why I wanted to have you on this show, while this is not a political show, it's more a technology show, is that the digital realm is affecting this, because there's a movement here towards not what we call professional journalism, where you go to journalism school and you work for the New York Times and you are not a spectator, where a journalist is watching and kind of judging, more towards what they call civic journalism or public journalism, where you really abandon that idea that I can't be a spectator. I am in here. I have a vested interest. I mean, do you now consider yourself a journalist? Is this citizen journalism?
Well, I would argue it's not quite, like, if you ask me, it's something like I don't have a final answer for it yet. If you ask me tomorrow, maybe I'll change my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But, as of now, I'd argue that we're not citizen journalists because we're an organization, right?
Right.
So as an organization, we provide, information. A lot of people have actually said that they look at us as their specific news source. I've had people who became subscribers who then said that they had just canceled their New York Times subscription to become subscribers to Twib Nation. So on one hand, we're a media organization. And so we're not just citizen journalists. But at the same time, am I a journalist? I would only say yes because of what I'm now seeing, because of what I see other people who consider themselves journalists, what they're doing.
Mm.
And I would argue that what they're doing, I would have never said was journalism ever. Even while I was in Ferguson, I had there was an interview with me and Tony Harris of Al Jazeera, and dude was talking to me like we were at a music festival.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up becoming like kind of a thing, because on that day it was I got interviewed by Al Jazeera, Patricia Bynes was interviewed on Fox, and Talib Kweli got interviewed by CNN. And
wow.
That whole day, all three of none of us did well with these interviews because they were speaking to us about this situation. And the fact is, people were here, like Talib had got thrown to the ground the night before with Rosa Clemente, who's a journalist. She actually ran for president, I think. And she was with him. They get thrown to the ground. I had been tear gassed a couple of days earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all talking about like this tragedy here. And the news is kind of having a different conversation completely. And I feel as if it was that moment where I think a lot of people, even though it's not something, I can't say everyone, but a lot of people realize that this was not, you can't look at the media the same anymore. There is a mm-hmm. very clear difference in what stories are being told. And at that point, you have to become a more discerning consumer of media, because if you actually want to know what's true, you can't just turn to these three spots that everyone goes on, Fox, MSNBC, CNN, whatever. You can't do that anymore.
There's a great quote I've been reading up on the concept of citizen journalism, because I wasn't sure if you'd have a strong opinion about that either way. But
right.
The idea behind citizen journalism is that this idea that people without formal training in journalism mm-hmm. have this opportunity with modern technology and basically the unlimited reach of the internet to create this content that would otherwise not be revealed. And I think that's the essence, I think, is what is interesting of what you all are doing, is you are finding stories that are simply not being told because right. of presumably the things that are subjected to the gatekeeping practices of the traditional media.
To the point where it's confusing even, because, I had folks over at the Washington Post hit me up saying, this is amazing reporting. I wish they would let us, report it. Like put this out.
Mm.
They would not allow, cause we had, like I said, one of the nights, the big difference between what we were doing and I believe, what quote unquote mainstream was that when I came into Ferguson, I didn't come in with the press. There were press staging areas, all that good stuff.
You didn't have press credentials?
I mean, well, in all honesty, a lot of people didn't have press credentials. People who were even quote unquote actual press didn't have press credentials. That wasn't really the thing. What the thing was that over time, so over the first couple of days, when the press finally got down there, they were kind of sprinkled around places. And then all of a sudden, press areas were formed, like right by where the QT got burned down. All of a sudden, MSNBC kind of set up a informal press area. And then WEACT Radio was down there and people started working that way. But then over time, once they realized that people weren't leaving, they created press staging areas. So all the press were set up on one specific spot. And at one point, it was moved like about a mile and a half away from where the main, quote-unquote main action, ground zero of all this was occurring. And it was, we weren't that. From the beginning, we were all, when I first got down there, when I first said, I'm coming down, it was the organizers saying, let us know when you're here, that we connected to. So like I get down on the ground, there's a moment where I think is probably the quintessential definition of the difference between what we were doing and what CNN was doing. And you could say if it was good or bad mm-hmm. on your own. But there's a moment where I get down there, I'm talking to folks, and one of the organizers say, Elon, could you grab this bag of water to give it to some folks? And I'm like, okay. And I grab the bag of water. I'm like, crap, I'm supposed to be reporting something, but like, okay, I should give out water. And at that very moment, Don Lemon is surrounded by five bodyguards talking to the camera, and you can't even, you can't even get near Don Lemon.
Don Lemon, of course, is the CNN anchor for people who don't know.
Right. And so I feel like that probably is the moment that kind of like defines the difference between the story that we're going to tell and the story they're going to tell. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a sense of being embedded. But I think another thing that changes what I would think of as a civic journalist or public journalism is this idea that, you might have, not you personally, but you have a vested interest. Like many citizen journalists aren't just assigned the job and sent down there. I mean, Don Lemon may have been given the job and sent down there for a number of reasons. But ultimately, though, someone made the assignment. While a citizen journalist may have a certain vested interest, like, I need to get down there. Like you said, if the audience wants us there, we'll go down there.
Right. And I mean, also, I call shenanigans. I mean, one of the reasons why I've always pushed back on even the concept of quote unquote being a journalist, mm-hmm. because I always felt as if the idea of journalism is that you put forward this story without any of your own biases.
Right.
It is a straightforward story. What I've learned over the past 6 years since TWIB has been formed, and a lot of what we've done is a lot of media critique.
Mm.
And what I've learned is. That is it's silly. It's like people always have their biases in it. And so the question is whether or not your bias will change the whole content of the story.
Mm.
And for us, I try to always make sure that I flat out say, this is my issue. This is where I'm coming from. But also let's look at the counter argument. So TWIB, we get a reputation of being, no BS overall. Like we're going to be in your face. We're going to say exactly what we think is right, no matter what. Whereas, in a world of that, I'm a quote unquote journalist, I couldn't flat out say, this is like, I'm not going to give the side of the officer in this. I'm not going to spend, a half hour going, well, the officer said, like, no, because that is not, the officer's going to get his say. And the officers and people are going to cover it. Like, if you looked at the news, they did a lot of that. Even though the cold hard facts is that an unarmed kid with four witnesses saying he was unarmed and had his hands up was shot. And then a cop was shuffled off. And then went into hiding and then went on paid vacation for the next, for how many or ever weeks since that's happened. That is those are just the facts of the case. And I cannot stop and go, well, what about the feelings of the cop? It's like, no, that's not the story here. The story is of a city that's being occupied by a police presence. The story is, the police, militarization and attack really of a peaceful protest because of what they were worried about.
How do I as a consumer of the news get the full story, get the sense of the fullness of these things in a world that's 140 characters at a time? Have we as a culture lost the attention span for a complicated multi-month long story with nuance?
Well, I don't believe we ever had it. To say that we lost it implied that at some point we were just so good and we would watch things.
Really?
For
you didn't
six,
read
seven weeks.
The Economist cover to cover like
no, and most people haven't. As a society, that's never what we've done. Now a lot of people like to make the argument that it's 140 characters, it's the Vine generation. It's like, well, yes, that is an aspect of things, mm-hmm. but my grandfather wasn't watching 5-hour debates on anything like that either. So if you want to learn about what's happening, you want to consume what's actually happening, you have to do some work. You have to take some of that responsibility and go forth and go, hey, I know that they said this, but I'm going to go check something else. Like a really silly version of this, Shane, I'm not Shane, Lord, Scott, I have one of my folks is named Shane. I apologize. A prime example of this was this morning. There was someone had taken an image and they had posted it. And the mm-hmm. image was about, it is something really silly, about Kanye West Kanye West and Kim Kardashian. And the picture was of, Jordan Sparks and her boyfriend or some dude she's dating, right? And so the image and everyone was like, seriously? And so everyone seriously, this is so sad. This is, they don't even like us or whatever. I looked at it and said, ugh, seriously? But the first thing I did was go look up the article. Cause I was like, what was the explanation? One, did they delete the tweet already? Did they delete the article?
Did it get pulled from somewhere else on the page? Facebook pulls previews? Who knows?
when I looked it up to find out that it was a slideshow about the biggest breakups that's happened within Hollywood, and it was Jordan Sparks, but the title was about Amber Rose, because that was what the Amber Rose and Amber Rose and Wiz Khalifa, not Cameron or something, and that was why they had that title. They were talking about that, but then they're like, oh, and then look at some other breakups. But that's right there is a prime example of what you have to do within your media, because that's something silly. That's like, who the hell cares about Wiz Khalifa and Amber Rose breaking up? But if this was about, let's say, Ferguson and a cop being shot, like all of a sudden that little thing that you might have saw that could have gone either way. It could have been like really anti-cop and unnecessarily, or it could be anti-protesters unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. It could be either way, but you have to take the time to go, you know what? Let me check on that. Like, just like when you ever see those stories that are obviously sounds crazy.
Oh, they just
crazy.
Said that that Eric Holder just got a $77 million job with JP Morgan Chase.
Right, like some
clearly
question.
Like, satire. Like, gosh, really? Gosh, and everyone's like, that didn't take long for him to get a job. I'm like, come on, you guys.
And to me, that's not like I feel like some of these sites that consider themselves satire. As someone who traffics within satire myself, mm-hmm. I call shenanigans on it. You're not. It's not satire.
No,
you're
it's
lying.
Not. It's just. It's just literally. Mm-hmm. It is an entirely fabricated story with a little bit like made you look at the bottom.
Right.
So one of the things that I wanted to cover with you though is that. You're some new noun. We don't know the noun. It's social commentary. It's advocacy. It's digital advocacy. It is not quite journalism, but it's more somehow. Maybe the word hasn't been invented. But when you're down there, you're capturing images. Like if you can go to TWIB, TWIB.FM, and you can take a look at the live dispatches from Ferguson, because suddenly journalism, at least from the perspective of a consumer like myself, becomes different when I'm looking at video as it happens. You were down there shooting live video, vines, video, audio. We had long audio moments where there was no dispute. This isn't something where we're going to argue about this happened or that happened. I can see the tape. How does this change when we've got high definition, multiple angles from everywhere? Do we need 5 hours of commentary when we have a 5 second vine that makes it clear what happened?
It depends on the situation, because that 5 second vine, and by the way, we people aren't like, oh, that's not true. We didn't use Vine.
I apologize.
No, it's no problem. What we ended up doing, was, and it's actually a part of my page I can't go back to for a while. We were using Instagram. And so Instagram had the 15-second clip.
Oh, longer than Vines, yeah.
Yes. So I specifically used Instagram because of the 15-second versus the 6-second, because I wanted to be able to get more information out. So we did like news clips. Like when the church got raided, I got there and I had clips of the people talking about it in 15-second bursts. When we found out about it, I told everyone in those 15-second bursts as dispatches, like, I'm on my way there. This is what happened, but within a 15-second clip so that it could be easily consumed. Mm-hmm. But it depends. So, but that's one aspect of it. That's not a debate about what's actually happening. That's not a debate about how we got here, what's the best way of fixing this with policy, organizing, things like that. So that's when long form is better. Mm-hmm. Whereas getting the information out, that was my goal at that time. So when I'm sending out 15-second Instagram videos of us being gassed by the police while laying on our bellies, mm-hmm. Hiding from the cops in someone's backyard, that's a 15-second moment. Like, this is what's happening now. I need you, wherever you are in the world, because a lot of international folks was following this, mm-hmm. Following me. I ended up gaining, I think, 10 or 12,000 new followers within the week and a half that I was down there. Mm-hmm. Because people were, like, trying to find out, well, what's happening. I call a lot of it, tragedy porn. But a lot of folks were like, I didn't know what was going on, and we needed to know people there saying exactly, like, because I would just record it.
Yeah.
And so you can decide, if you think I'm wrong, fine, but you heard what just happened.
Right.
Now you decide what you think happened.
Right. It's absolutely amazing that in the 7 years that I've been on Twitter, how I'm seeing the Miracle on the Hudson as it happens. You know, I'm seeing news and I'm seeing it 3, 5, 6 hours before it hits CNN.com. As a spectator, as a consumer of news, I'm finding that to be absolutely extraordinary. And you've got big ideas about basically setting up multi-hundred-thousand-dollar kind of live satellite streaming, but on your back in a way that is I haven't seen before. Talk to me about your plans for going back down to Ferguson and giving us the news that we want to see.
So last time I was in Ferguson, I was talking to some of the folks over at React Radio, and I was complaining about the idea of the connections going in and out. Like that's one of the reasons why we didn't do any video, like live video streams, because I was worried about the connection. Because like the only connection I had that was surefire was my LTE connection on my iPhone. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up using that as a connection for audio because I didn't want to tax it with trying to push full video, because at this point, and I know this, maybe I'm being a tech snob or something like that, 480p is not really doing it. I can't see half what's happening. It's like it's super small. You can't really see details. So I want to do it in HD, but it wasn't going to work that way. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to them, and they were like, oh, you know, there's these backpacks that you can do like full on broadcast from, but it costs like $20,000. And I was like, I can't afford that. But I'm an XIT guy. I'm a tech person. So every time these things happen, I'm always trying to figure out the technical method to fix this problem. How do we get this going? And so I was looking at it, and I saw the backpacks, and all the backpacks were fancy methods of connecting to a bunch of different hotspots at once, mm-hmm. creating the whole HD pipe. And so I'm like, we should be able to do that on our own. And it was something that I was looking at. I was thinking about it. And then I just happened to go pass by some software that actually, that is what they do. They specifically connect to multiple different connections to create one pipe. And I'm like, huh. So that means that if I can connect, get a couple of hotspots, which I mean, a Verizon MiFi hotspot, which does 4G LTE, you can get one for like $100 and something. And then the cost per month is, if you want to do like a full month, is $90. So you grab five of these, you pay the month charge, or you can do less if you want to like warm up to it, and you with a laptop, the Wi-Fi spots on you, and then you have the laptop running a server that actually creates a Wi-Fi, use a Wi-Fi a network with all of those things, so that any Wi-Fi technology that you have near you can jump on your now mobile HD right. connection. You now can, so people who like one of the issues we were having was trying to get images up, getting videos up, because the connection was bad. But now you jump on our Wi-Fi, you can just put it up immediately. We can actually get that information out. And then I was looking at like DC converters, so that all of a sudden the car that we have becomes a surge protector that we can connect all of our electronics into. So all of a sudden now I can bring down a little TV studio in a box, mm-hmm. Connect three cameras to it. And we can do a full-on three-camera shoot from a mobile position at that moment.
Right.
Stuff that at one point you could not imagine happening without having the backing of a full-on NBC or ABC. Now people, spaces, indie spaces like us can do that long as we use the know-how that luckily like we have here at TWIB and the technology that's available.
Right, absolutely. So people who have these hotspots, you know, are told that they will do 7 megabits, and that's, you know, not moving, sitting on the ledge of your hotel window, you
right.
know, usually you can get, you know, Netflix going. But what you're saying is you get one from Sprint, you get one from Verizon, you get one from AT&T, and you chain them together into one shared spot that utilizes what's underneath it. And you've got a reliable network connection.
Right. And I mean, of course things happen and it could, there could be still issues. I mean, the fact is that we've watched, major networks all of a sudden say lose connection. Like, oh, we've lost connection with the person in the field. And those people have millions of dollars to invest in that. Mm-hmm. So losing a connection here and there is not the biggest problem. But because of technology, because of how we do things, like the fact is like when we were broadcasting on my audio only stream, there were hundreds upon hundreds of retweets of people going, listen to the stream right now.
Right.
It's happening right now. He's in Ferguson in that area. Go listen. And it changed the entire conversation mm-hmm. around that. And so like a little space like us that doesn't have all that funding, which I mean, if we had funding, it would be ridiculous. But basically creating our own space, having our audience, subscribe and pay for what we do. And now we can actively challenge the mainstream media with millions upon millions of corporate dollars. Mm-hmm. We are saying you're wrong and you're going to have to deal with this. And I mean, I ended up going on MSNBC the week after I had, I was down there, and that's when the first time that it was played on national television that the story that Captain Ron Johnson and them was talking about one of those nights where they were like, oh, there wasn't really the gas was only this. It was only the protesters and rioters. And all of a sudden you get to hear me in a car with organizers by ourselves, no rioters, no protesters are around, driving into the city, the area, see six people running towards us, and you can hear the reaction. You can hear when all of a sudden they start shooting the tear gas canisters. You can hear all of that for yourselves, and it changes the entire discussion.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that your point, to go back just a little bit, your point about not being 480p also changes the discussion. I think, you know, citizen journalism is great, but vertical video syndrome sucks. Like, you'd think that something would happen and we could actually see it in HD by someone who knows how to hold a camera straight. I personally would love to see a GoPro, not on the head of a BMX biker, but on your head, streaming HD. There's the new Wi-Fi backpack from GoPro connected to your stream, and we've got a live there in wherever the news is happening and with commentary. That would be amazing.
Dude, I'm trying. This might sound funny. I'm trying to buy a drone.
That's a great idea.
They're not expensive. Like, you can get a drone for a few hundred dollars if you find the right spot and like put it up there. Like, we saw, like, actually Al Jazeera had a drone out there, last time we were there. And I was like, how much is a drone? And I started doing research. Like, I found drones for $300-$400.
Well, I would go a little bit upscale. I'd get like a Parrot AR drone too. You'd get 720p, 30 frames a second out of that.
So, depending on how much that costs, if it was within our budget, I would totally do that, because I believe at this point, being able to grab these things, get it out there, we change the entire narrative around any of these things. So many times we hear conflicting stories, and I'm not a big fan of conflicting stories. That was also one of the reasons why I was in Ferguson, because I was seeing people say stuff, and I'm like, I don't know if you're right. Hell, there are people that I trust, that I have met, I like, and I believe they are good people and are not attempting to mislead anyone. And I'm not sure I would trust them with certain things. So that's why I feel a need to go down there and show as much as possible. You can report it or you can show it. And when you show it, it's a very different discussion. All of a sudden, people have to deal with the fact that they can debate me over a tweet or something, but you can't debate a picture. Even though people, by the way, were trying to debate me about the audio
like
of me being gassed.
Looks like Photoshop. Must have Photoshopped that audio.
Someone actually yelled at me saying that, like, oh, with all those cameras out there, you could only get audio. It's like, we were by ourselves. Remember when the press got escorted out of Ferguson and we were the only ones still there? I'm sorry that I don't have a full light crew and 1080p video for you, but that's what we had and that's what we told the story with. But in my mind, in the back of my head, I was going, you know what? I got to figure out a way to get more video. I got to get more audio. I want as much proof as possible at all times. So when I say something, I'm not just saying it. I have all the proof in the world.
Right. When you get this backpack, like Justin TV, if you remember those guys, that kind of a style situation, but in full HD, that is going to be really amazing.
Yep. And that's my plan.
Well, thanks so much, Jalon James White. He's an award-winning blogger, radio host. He's the founder and editor-in-chief of This Week in Blackness at TWIB. You can check out TWIB at twib.fm. Thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you, sir.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.